there's a little bit of like, this world wasn't really designed for me anyways, so I'm certainly not going to try to fit in to some like crazy little box that's like very small. Yeah. So I'm just like, well, what's the worst that could happen? I don't know.
Lead by Example with Bob Myers is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook. You bet, you get with Caesars Rewards. Must be 21 or older.
Welcome to Lead by Example. I'm your host, Bob Myers. Today, Megan Rapinoe joins us, which is awesome. We don't know each other, but I think we know some of the same people. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
I feel like a lot of people think they know you. I might be one of them. And maybe your public is your private. I don't know. But I'm excited to get to know you a little bit better. Starting out as a young Megan, we talked about you're from Reading, which is kind of interesting. I'm not from too far away from there, but as a young woman, young girl, did you, when you thought about your life and you thought about what it might be, were you a big dreamer? Was it kind of like, I'm going to do these things? Or were you destined to say, well, nobody gets out of Reading and that stuff's not for me?
No, I was a big dreamer for sure. I was just so into sports. I grew up like 90s Bulls fan, 90s Cowboys fan too. So I think I'm probably a little bit of the bandwagon.
It feels like that.
Yeah, a little bit. My dad is from Chicago, like loosely. Right. My mom's from Texas, loosely. But I feel like I grew up like idolizing that. I mean, obviously, if you're, you know, watching Michael Jordan and the Bulls, you know, Dennis Rodman, all of that in the 90s. It was just so entertaining. And like, I think I was enthralled with that probably mostly. Just like, this is like different than any other, you know, sports scene that I've ever seen. And I just love playing sports. I don't really think I didn't know I was from a small town. I just, you know, kind of where you're from. But I was always kind of like, wow, that would be amazing. I never remember wanting to be anything other than exactly what I am, or, you know, Michael Jordan, which wasn't going to happen. But something like that.
Was that just you, or did people, were your parents... Who encouraged that? Or are you just kind of indefatigable? Was it like, nobody's stopping me, I'm doing this?
I think a little bit of both. I think from such a young age, I'm a twin as well. I think from such a young age, my sister and I both were just like, we were good at sports. We were the youngest of six in our family. So we kind of had some older siblings to beat up on us a little bit. But we were just like good from a young age. And so I think my parents had more of like a hands-off approach, really, even when we got more serious about it and started traveling and in high school and all of that. They were kind of like, you guys tell us, like, you obviously have the talent and, you know, we would love for you to do this and like get your college paid for and do that. That was kind of their goal. But I don't think they really had to motivate us at all. I think we just like from such a young age loved competing and love sports. We played one-on-one literally everything, and obviously being a twin, we were able to do that and kind of have that sort of like built-in buddy all the time. But yeah, it was just something that felt, I think, so natural to both of us, but especially me.
I think it's interesting in our lives where you look back at these things that happened to you, maybe bad, maybe good, where you look back at a young age and go, I learned something pretty big from that experience. And many times it's not a good thing. Was there anything that happened in the formative years where you look back and says, when this happened, it kind of moved me in a direction, or I learned this about myself, or I figured this out about life?
I think a little bit different to most elite athletes. I feel like I learned in the opposite. I think most time everybody's like amazing and the best at everything until they get around the competition and they're like, oh, other people are good too, and you know, the world doesn't just revolve around me. But I think because I was a twin and I was a little bit of a late bloomer, just kind of like physically and like in my confidence, I actually kind of had a moment in high school, maybe it was like junior year or so, where I was like, oh, I'm actually this good. Like, my sister was like always better than me. She was always faster than me and always like better on the field kind of until like midway through high school. And even like playing on, you know, elite club teams or whatever it was, I think I had to come to that realization like, oh, I'm that player. Like, I'm that good. I want to have these kinds of dreams, and kind of like believing in myself that way. I feel like that came a little bit later. I knew that I was good, but I think being from such a small town, we didn't really have a lot of comparison. There wasn't really any comps. We didn't even play soccer in our hometown, like barely at all. So I think it wasn't until like midway through high school, I was like, oh, I think I'm one of the best players. This is a little bit strange, but okay.
Yeah, that's. I think nowadays, I don't know, you're around young women and men athletes. I feel like they get told that way before it's true, where you kind of, it's rare that an athlete figures it out for themselves without all these senior adult figures getting way ahead of where it should be.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think being from a smaller place as well, like our club team wasn't amazing. I was never on the best club team. We were kind of like a ragtag bunch. So I spent most of my high school years like getting the absolute snot kicked out of us all the time, you know, but it would be like, you know, we would lose like 6-4 and I would have 3 goals, or, you know, our team kind of like gradually sort of got better and we didn't have all of that pressure. I mean, I think now with like Instagram and everybody's clipping everything and putting highlights together, and I mean, obviously you see it a lot, just with the business that surrounds you know, the NBA players or these elite athletes. It's like everybody kind of wants not only a little piece, and sometimes it's not even that nefarious, but people want to be the one that believes in this player or started with them when they were younger, and you kind of lose sight of the main thing. I mean, ultimately, like, you need to have fun, you need to enjoy. You need that space to grow and to fail and to be challenged as a young athlete. And I think, yeah, there's definitely a lot of like, you're amazing, you're going to be the best thing ever at an age where you can't tell.
Yeah.
There's very few athletes, like maybe LeBron James, you know, you're him from your 14 and we're him. But you know, I think for most of us, it's like, we'll see. We'll see when you hit your growth spurt or you hit puberty. We'll see when you get into college, we'll see how injury-wise you stay. We'll see how you sort of develop and how your game and everything develops into that sort of elite professional level. It takes a little bit of time. And I think, yeah, like you said, a lot of people get a lot of that pressure really early on. And then it just becomes about not being the best ever. And you don't really get to grow and you don't really get to develop.
What was your, I think you've talked about your mom a little bit more than your dad, and maybe you have, and I just missed the stuff on your dad, but when they started realizing how good you were, I mean, I don't know if you go to these 10-year-old soccer games or basketball, or you see these parents that are literally screaming that their kid's not getting enough shots or not enough time, and it's pretty common, you know? And then I wonder, different time, different era, maybe Reading, were your parents, what was their role in the whole thing? And even beyond when you were in 11th grade, how did they, because what, you had the twin sister, you have other siblings. What was their place in this whole thing for your journey?
They were just like our support system through and through. I think they realized from an early age with us, like, they can probably go to college and get their college paid for. And that was like the main goal, like get your education paid for. So I feel like they sacrificed so much financially and time-wise. I mean, playing any of these club sports now, and even back then, it's like you're in the car on, you know, either Friday night or early Saturday morning. It's all weekend. You're driving all over. You're flying all over. So I feel like for them, they were chill on the sideline. They were not vocal like that. They weren't like in anybody's face. They let us do our thing and almost like put the responsibility on us. We're not going to do this for you. We're not going to motivate you. You tell us. If you want us to do this, we'll do it. But if you guys aren't into this, like, we're not wasting all this time and money if we're going to have to drag you through it. So I feel like for me, that was actually better because it always left, you know, the ball in my court. Like, do I even want to do this? Is this something that I'm into? And then they were there to support and give up, you know, every weekend and, you know, basically every dime that they had to make this happen and be that support system for us in all the ways that we needed, and they kind of let us and let me fail and struggle and figure it out myself on the field, like, they couldn't do that for me. And nobody can do that. Like, nobody can do that for you. You have to figure that out in your game and how you want to progress and, you know, your sort of trajectory and development. So they just kind of gave everything up to be like, you guys can get your college paid for and you can go to school and get your education. And then, like, whatever happens from there is kind of icing.
So multiple choice test, okay? You just lost a big game, which you don't lose much. So
not many, but I have a few.
You have had some. So picture, you know, you're riding home, which I imagine at the age you lost, I don't know if it was young, old, or the tough losses, and your mom and dad are in the car and you're in the back seat. Is it A, you're saying, I can't believe I lost to those guys or those girls, whatever, you know, that team. And your mom or dad going, well, Megan, you got to play. You got to work a little harder if you want to do that. Or are they saying, you know, on that, you should have used your left foot on that play. I mean, you got to focus. Or are they saying, hey, you know, we got a big weekend next weekend. We're going to a camping trip. I mean, what was their kind of engagement? Because I think that's interesting. You said it was your thing, right? It was yours. And when did they push it back to you? Because a lot of kids will be like, vent to their parents. It's a safe place to go. And some parents elevate that and kind of take it to a place that's a little unhealthy. It feels like yours were a little bit, hey, if this is what you want to do, you go do it. Was it really that clean? Because that's kind of unusual.
It was pretty clean. I would say the only thing that was unacceptable from them ever was if we didn't, like, if we were not working hard. Mm-hmm. And if we weren't, like, giving our all. There's a few, like, funny times my mom would look back, you know, in the van. We had, like, of course, we had, like, a minivan. She'd be like, are you guys feeling okay? Like, are you sick? What's going on? Because what's happening here? I didn't really see the effort that I needed to see, you know? But it was more like they were just honest with us, you know? Yeah. I think at times it was like that other team was better. And it was like, they're better. Like, you guys played well and you played really hard and that's, you know, important. But there was no sugarcoating going on. It was kind of like, it is what it is. And it was definitely never, I mean, I think just even outside of soccer, my parents were never allowed us to really do the blame thing. Yeah. I think even in school and stuff, I think being really good at sports and being that kind of led to being more popular. They were kind of like, no, you have a responsibility to, like, uplift other people. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be the best players on the team, you can't be, you know, basically bitching about other players. Yeah. Like, do something about it or talk to that player or help them. So I feel like that was I didn't really realize that it was happening at the time. But I think they were always just, like, low-key but, like, honest with us in a way that didn't allow that, you know, that weird ego, that kid ego of, like, oh, I'm going to let my head get all big because I'm good at, like, kids club soccer. Like, they were like, no, this isn't that important. Like, you're going to be a good person and, you know, do all the right things.
What, it's funny you mentioned the simple, honest part. My daughter I have three daughters, but my middle daughter lost a basketball game. And the other team was one of those really good club kind of, and my daughter said, Dad, what do you think they're doing that we're not? And I said, probably practicing. That's like, but the honesty part where I feel like it's not okay anymore when you lose to say, what happened? They're a lot better than we are. Because it's almost like, what are you going to do with that, right? And so as you've led and mostly won, when you've had adversity on a team, whether it's college or pro or international games, is that what you throw back at the team? When there's, you use the word bitching, I live in that world too here. Uh-huh. Are you able to vocalize that? Because I don't play. I mean, you have a lot of power because you're really good and you've won. And so you check all these boxes of leadership. Do you throw that back on teammates and say, stop doing that? That's not getting us anywhere. Because I still think in the moment, that's not an easy thing for people to hear a lot of times.
No, it's really not. It's not satisfying at all. That's even for myself. I'm like, oh, the other team's just better and we lost this really important game. That sucks. But I mean, I try to do that. I feel like, I mean, yeah, sometimes the refs are terrible and they really blow calls, or the other team is not, you know, I feel like not playing the game the right way or the way that I would play it, or we had a bad game or whatever. But ultimately, like, we can't really control any of that. I think being in sports so long and playing in so many different types of championship scenarios, you know this, like, you can only control what you can control. And the more you focus on that, the better chance you have, because something is always going to go wrong. Like, some call is going to get blown. Some fans are going to say this. Some player's not going to play well. Even, like, within your team, less about, like, you didn't play well and you need to play better, and more, like, we need to play better. And let's just be honest about our performance. Like, did we actually deserve to win? No. And if we didn't, let's talk about it. And sometimes you actually do deserve to win, and you just don't. And that's sports, too. Like, sports are beautiful and cruel all at the same time, you know? Yeah. And sometimes you really deserve to win, and you don't. And sometimes you get lucky, and you don't deserve to win, and you win, too. So it's not an easy thing to swallow, and sometimes it's hard to even say that or hear that in the moment. And I think it is important to let some of that frustration out and vent, because sometimes it is, you know, frustrating, but... Yeah, I think in the end, it. I always try to bring it back to, what can we actually do about it, and let's try to do that, because we're kind of wasting time if we're spending too much time on something else.
So, you personally, you know, first World Cup, and then the year after you came out about your sexuality. Was that, how hard or not was that? And if you could go back, two questions. I don't know. I imagine it wasn't easy. I don't know. Maybe it was. Maybe it was liberating. And if one question, what did that feel like in the moment? And if you could do it all again, what would you do differently?
You know, it's interesting. It kind of became because I came out in college.
Okay.
I feel like I was, like, out in my life. You know, not publicly, but it was also, like, a weird time with the team, where the team wasn't obviously as popular as we are now, or even as popular as we were after the World Cup in 2011. So it was kind of a simultaneous, like, our stock was rising, so then there's more eyes and more questions. It didn't even feel like if I came out before the World Cup, it'd be like coming out to who, you know? We didn't even have that much coverage. And people would be like, what?
Yeah.
So it was kind of one of those things where it just felt, it started to feel awkward that I wasn't out, because I was out in my normal life, and it just was like, this is weird. Why am I not, you know, saying this?
Were you actually asked, and did you hide it, so to speak, or you just didn't announce it?
Yeah, I didn't. No one really asked, but I feel like, I mean, listen, you can look however you want. Just because you have short hair doesn't mean you're gay. But, like, I looked pretty gay. So I was, like, having short hair and having a vibe. It was, like, clear that I was gay, but then I wasn't saying it. And it's not really appropriate for anyone in the media to, like, ask. Of course they're not. Ass. So then I felt like it was on me, and then I was kind of like, well, this just feels a little weird. It was that I'm not weird, but, like, it felt like this is the right time. And it was kind of, you know, 2008 and 9 in California, I think it was Prop 8 was happening, and so it was much more, like, in the general conversation of society. And then kind of leading up to the Olympics, our team had, you know, had a great World Cup, which we lost in the final, which is still just, oof, tough. That was one where we, like, should have won, but we didn't. Just got to throw it up to the gods. But, you know, the stock of the team is rising. We're going into London 2012. And it just kind of felt like the right time. I didn't really struggle with it personally, but I knew that it was going to be one of those things, like, that was going to be important. I really wanted to do it, and it was important to me to do it. But I also was like, this is important that people come out. I think especially people like me, my family was accepting, like, my friends are accepting. I didn't really struggle with it, and so many people do. And I feel like it's important to have people like me come out who are like, you know what, it's okay, and it's joyful, and it's, like, a beautiful experience. It doesn't have to be all about struggle all the time.
Right. And so you said nobody asked you, obviously, because it's, you said they might have known or it looked that way, but then when you said officially to the public, did you have the thought of, now I'm making my private life public? Now I'm making this choice where now they might ask me. Now I'm going to be looked at in a way where I'm opening myself up to that world. And it's not just about your sexual, it's about caring more than that. Was that a thought, or are you just kind of like, look, I don't want to, I'm just going to tell everybody and I don't care what happens after that?
Yeah, I thought about it a little bit. But again, like at that time we were just, our profile was so much lower. So like it was a big thing, but not like it, you know, not maybe like it would be now if someone came out now, just because our profile is so much higher. But I did know it was going to be a thing. And I think I was okay with that. I was like, I want to be public about this. Like, I think it's, you know, it's also just like who I am. I feel like I'm a very open book. You sort of said earlier, I think people feel like they know me. And I think in a large way they do, obviously. I mean, certainly parts of my life that are private, but I feel like I am a pretty open book. And so that felt like a natural kind of next progression. And I think I knew a little bit like subconsciously, like I can handle this and like I want this. Like I want to be, you know, someone who can talk about it, because it's so hard for so many people. And there's so few athletes, especially at that time, you know, going into the Olympics, there were so few athletes that were out. I was kind of like, this could be like a good thing for people and a good thing for me.
So when you were younger, it's interesting, even the initial, like, this is me and it's not maybe like everybody else, that was also natural. It seems like either you are unbelievable at recovering from like personal like pain. Like we all go through life with some kind of hurt.
Yeah.
And it feels like either that you take that in and process it in a healthy way and keep moving, or you're just have this stamina or ability to kind of, I don't think in an unhealthy way, take it, but how do you do that? Because how do you be 12 years old as a girl or 13 and be like, hey, this is the deal, this is what I am, and keep it moving? Was it that simple?
No, I think it took, I mean, I didn't come out until really like college. So I think I was a little like confused about, I didn't really have the conscious thought like, oh, I'm gay and now I'm hiding it when I was younger. Okay. But then when I like figured it out in college, then looking back, I was like, oh my gosh, like, of course I'm gay. Come on. I'm like, no, man, like nobody told me, like, come on, fam. Like somebody's got to give me the word, you know? But yeah, it didn't feel, and it's weird. It's like, you know, being from Reading, it's obviously a very conservative town. My family was like, you know, relatively conservative, but I actually didn't feel like in practice we really were. Like we were open and accepting, and it was always like, don't judge anyone. And you never know what anybody, you know, grew up like. I mean, I think, you know, from just like hearing stories about my mom, she grew up really poor. And like people made fun of her because her clothes were ripped going to school or something. But it was just like, she's poor. Like she can't do anything about this. Just like hearing that perspective. So we kind of like, I feel like had this like oddly progressive household while being like very, you know, just sort of conservative in this weird way. But it just, I think kind of once I figured it out, I was like, oh, well, this makes sense now. A lot makes sense now. And that, I think that was kind of the vibe. And like I said, my family was, you know, supportive. I mean, it took a little bit of time for people, because just, you know, parents have, you know, an idea of how they want their kids to be, and they didn't want it to be any harder for me or anything like that. But I think I didn't really struggle with that too much. I mean, I think a lot of my confidence is natural.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly where that comes from. I've always been that kind of gregarious, you know, performer type. As I've started doing more therapy, though, I'm like, I think I am dissociating a little.
Well, see, that I know. I definitely am. I can't picture you suffering, you know? Like, it's a hard, I bet a lot of people look at you and think you're supposed to be the toughest and strongest mentally, maybe physically too. And it's funny, when people get put in that position publicly sometimes, I wonder what they deal with privately, where they go, everybody thinks I'm this. I can't really be in pain. Like, it's hard for me, I don't even know you, to think about you struggling with what you project. Does that make sense? Like who you, but I know that can't be true. That can't,
Well, no, I definitely suffer. I definitely suffer. Yeah, I don't know exactly how I, you know, got to be the way that I am. There is a lot of suffering, man. I think it's hard to be human sometimes, and it's hard to, especially in sports where, yeah, you have this, you have to perform. So no matter what's happening in your life, like, you got to play. I mean, you guys, you play 80 games, play 50 some games a year, 40 games a year, like, you got to show up to practice every day. So I think there's a part of it that's a little bit of a learned compartmentalization that, frankly, isn't always healthy, but it's like adaptive for sports. It's not always adaptive for life, but we learn how to do it, and you learn how to compartmentalize and just, you know, have to perform, and you have to put things to the side. You have to, you know, be physically, mentally, and emotionally available to be an elite athlete, which I think it takes all three to be great and to be a great teammate and to be really great at your craft. But that does come at a price. Like, it is difficult going through I went through when I knelt with Colin. Like, people were saying crazy stuff. Or different injuries that I've had, or even just like aging as an athlete and trying to like wrap my head around that, or God forbid you have like a personal thing that happens in your life. People don't think about that, you know, with
not allowed.
Yeah, we're just like people on TV that do sports and score goals and make baskets and stuff.
Yeah.
But there definitely is like, and I think as I've gotten older, I started to do a lot more therapy this last year.
Mm-hmm.
It's like starting to understand kind of how I am the way that I am. I think I am really good at dissociating, but sometimes I have to. Like, I can't take on, especially talking about a lot of things that we talk about, whether it's racial justice or some of the more like intense social justice kind of things. Like, you can't take that on personally all the time. You're speaking from such a platform that's so much bigger than you individually. I mean, even with social media, like, it's weird that, you know, millions of people have theoretical like access to, like, I don't know people, they don't know me. So like understanding that more. And I think my family, honestly, really, and my like friends and people around me, I have an amazing agent, a woman just that worked with me, and my partner Sue, I have a twin sister, my family, like, they have always just kept me very humble. Like, honestly, sometimes it's annoying. I'm like, let me shine. Like, let me get floaty for a second. But I think they've always just always looked at me just like me.
Yeah.
You know? And it's scary. Like, because you are kind of two people. It's like, I'm making Pino, but I'm also, you know, I'm just me. So I think, you know, as I've gotten older, just trying to find the balance and trying to like tap into a little bit more of that. I think sometimes you're younger, you're just kind of doing your thing. But I think the like the family part and the people that I've had around me, I've been really lucky from such a young age to have just really grounded, solid, like normal people around me who like love what I do and think it's amazing and it's so cool. But it's also like, that's not the thing that they love most about me. They love me for who I am. And I think that's really important for, I mean, people just in general, but certainly for athletes, because you get this weird sort of like adoration, this like societal adoration, that it's hard to keep your feet on the ground.
The kneeling thing's interesting. I'm gonna tell you a brief, my experience, small experience, not anywhere near what you did. And I was in San Quentin, and there was a kind of a forum with the inmates and a couple civic leaders, and Robbie Gold was in there from the 49ers football team, and Eric Reed, who was a friend of Colin, or is a friend of Colin's, and Eric Reed kind of took up the cause. I think he was kneeling with Colin as well, and he was speaking about why he was doing it and what it was supposed to represent. And I think I asked him, why is everybody making it about something else? Like, you're disrespecting the flag or a military. And he looked at me and he said, we need white people to help us. He goes, we don't get to shape a narrative. There's only a small percentage of black people in the country. Like, why doesn't white people come and say like what's going on? And I was like, of course. I mean, why? But it was an interesting moment where obviously you, and I think you've said this before, present a very different person that somebody might say would kneel, right? And did you know, Was that a very easy decision for you where you thought, I'm absolutely doing this. This is 100% right. I don't regret it then. I don't regret it now. And I have great conviction about this. Or was there any hesitation? Like, I need to understand this. How did you come to that place?
Yeah, it was very easy. I thought it made perfect sense the second that I heard Colin speak. I feel like I can still remember the, you know, the Sports Center clip, him in front of his locker. I feel like what he said then is as applicable now as it will be in, you know, 10, 20 years. And it just, like, it just hit in this way.
What did he say? Can you remember what he said?
Basically, he was just saying that, you know, police brutality in the U.S. is not like a debate. It's happening. Yeah. And we had just gone through, I mean, this was, you know, September 2016. We had gone through Trayvon Martin.
Right.
Very, you know, obviously high profile public. We'd gone through Ferguson with the murder of Michael Brown. We'd gone through shooting a police officer. I think it was at Dallas or Louisiana. So there was like a lot of high profile shootings. The WNBA had protested in 2016 during the summer of the Lynx. And they actually had law enforcement walk out on their game to like protest the fact that they were protesting. So it was like, it was kind of like in the public sort of air. And I just remember Colin speaking about it so clearly, like, this is just a systemic problem that we have, that, like, open up your eyes, everyone. It's not and it's not like a, is this happening or is this not? I mean, just look at the history of our country, basically.
Right.
We're founded on slavery and you know, just the brutality that has persisted all of that time. And I think immediately I kind of just like innately drew this this comparison to like me coming out as gay. Like, I had been in a position that I had asked people who were gay to understand what I was saying. I don't need you to be gay to understand what I'm asking of you. I'm asking you to stand with me. I don't even need you to walk in my shoes. I just need you to believe me. And then we can have that. So I feel like that just was very clear to me almost instantaneously, like, oh, that's what Colin's asking for. Colin's asking for people to believe him and to believe Black people at large and to stand with them. And like, don't worry about what everybody's going to say. Like, you either, to me, it was like, you either believe Colin or you need to be prepared to call Colin and Black people a liar. That this isn't happening, because this is their shared experience across the country, across, you know, the world, really. And so for me, I was kind of like, that's the only marching order that I needed to pay attention to, or the only group that I needed to make sure I was doing right by, because they were asking for allyship, basically.
Sure.
So it was kind of like, that was very clear. And I think having the very clear mechanism of kneeling in protest. I mean, we'd seen, you know, the fists up at the Olympics, and we've seen other forms. And it was like, that was the genius of it, is like, you have a very clear, an anthem gets played at every game and every, you know, sport all across. It's something you can do. You don't need a flag. You don't need anything. You don't need anything on your body. You're not wearing a shirt. You can just kneel. And what you're doing is signaling, like, I'm with you and I hear you and I believe you, and I will put my skin in the game. I think, to your point, what Eric said, like, Black people can say all they want. Yeah, we want to be treated better. We think racism is happening. But, like, unless we do it as white people, we're the ones perpetrating this, and we're the ones in power. We're the ones that have that sort of privilege. So, I mean, to me, it was, like, one of the best things I feel like I've ever done. It taught me so much. I think it opened my eyes immediately. I definitely think I was naive to a lot of what I thought I didn't think the backlash was going to be exactly what it was. I didn't think it was going to be great, but I was also like, wow, this is pretty crazy. But also, like, the fact that it was so crazy, I was like, oh, we're on something. Like, we're on the right track here. The people are big mad, and when white people get big mad, it's usually because they don't want to talk about the thing that they don't want to talk about. So that kind of, like, immediately I was like, okay, that makes a lot of sense. And I think for me too, it was one of those things, like, I was very privileged. Like, I'm, you know, by all, you know, in intents and purposes, I'm a rich, white, privileged athlete.
Right.
So I am protected, and
yeah.
I'm not going to be subjected to the kind of treatment that everyday people are going to be subjected to. I just have so much more privilege and security and protection than that. So I felt like it was something that I think so many other white athletes should have done and just didn't, and really missed an opportunity, which is sad.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
More Lead by Example after this.
Spoiler alert, you're not going to win every bet you place. But with Caesars Sportsbook, win or lose, every bet gives you reward credits and tier credits, which you can exchange for the best perks in the game. Hotel stays, VIP experiences, sports and concert tickets, and more. Download the Caesars Sportsbook app and start earning with Caesars Rewards.
If you have a gambling problem, in Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed to Horseshoe, Bossier, City, and Harris, New Orleans. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, which is 1-800-426-2537. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. New York, call 877-8-HOPENY or text HOPENY 467-369.
And we're back. What are you most proud of, Megan? What's your number one? It doesn't have to be anything you want.
I feel like I've been a part of this movement, you know, especially on this team, but it goes beyond that, of like really changing the world for better. Whether it's, you know, standing with Colin or kneeling with Colin or equal pay or coming out as gay, I feel like I'm most proud that I've used my platform to do something beyond just playing the game. And that is very important to me as well. I mean, winning makes everything better, as you know, Bob.
But it feels like you haven't, well, a lot of people win. There's a lot of people, maybe not as much as you, but there are people that win a lot. And in these moments where they don't also kneel or sue an institution or promote women's or a whole gender's rights, and those opportunities, it's interesting. And you said it was for you, the kneeling was kind of like, I'm doing this. Was it the same to fight for gender equality for you? It feels to me like you see these moments and you go, you think, of course. But that would diminish how hard these things are. I mean, it's easy to say, I'm going to kneel, but then you get exposed to hate or many people. I don't know what happened in your fight for the gender equity. Like, what did you hear about that? I'm sure it wasn't all in your support.
Yeah.
But you choose to kind of stand up and say, hey, I'm doing what's right and you want to come down my road? I'll deal with it. That's not an easy thing to do.
No, it's really not. It has been really hard, but it almost feels like there's not really a choice. I think sports is very important, and I'm serious about my sports and all of that. And I think it's an amazing vehicle, but like we just get one life, and like what's the point of life? I mean, for me, I'm not a religious person at all. So I just am like, we get one life to do whatever it is that you want to do with it. And it's like, for me, if I'm not living my full self, I mean, I think it comes from my own desire and like need to be myself and to be an individual and to have the space for that, like to not give everybody else that or not fight for that for everybody else just seems like insane to me. I'm kind of like, I feel like that's what I've kind of done, is like leveraged all the power that I have from how successful I've been in sports and that our team's been in sports to do, you know, the opposite of that work, which is like making it better and continuing to push forward. And like, I just would feel like, yeah, I can like be rich and famous and be an athlete and do all these things, but I'm like, if you're not giving back and you're not making the world a better place, like what's the point? I'm like, you're gonna be 90 and just be like, I messed everything up, like I was selfish and I didn't that's like been, I think, the most beautiful gift too. It's been really difficult. It's difficult to go into a World Cup and sue your federation. And, you know, it's difficult to do all of these things and to stand up and have to, you know, at times be tired and go do media and like all that it takes. But it's also given so much back, like tenfold back that, you know, you see people on the street and you've like changed their lives or you've changed the course of their life or, you know, you made them feel more comfortable or, you know, you made it feel like they wanted to stay in the world even. You know, we hear that a lot, so many different people. So it's just, I think as much as you give, you get so much back. And what I feel like is the point of life, which is like living it to the fullest.
What makes you so, or do you even recognize, why do you think you're so unafraid in your life? Because I think that's pretty rare.
I do think I dissociate from bad feelings. So
I love your therapy. I love the last year of therapy. This is fantastic.
I'm like, I have been thinking back a lot. Like, I'm like, am I just, because even sometimes, like, I probably shouldn't say this like in public, but I'm like, sometimes I gape film. I'm like, I don't want to watch it. Like, I'm sure I did some bad things. I'm just going to like freak out. I think there's a little bit of that. I almost feel like I'm two people at times. Like, I know I'm just like my personal self, but then there is like this public persona that's like a character almost in this game. So I feel like I can not take everything on so heavy while still like I understand the weight that I can throw or the impact that I can have. And I just think like I would want someone to do that for me if I didn't have a voice. And I think we are so privileged as athletes and so privileged to be in the business that we're in, to being, you know, playing in these like arenas and to be doing something that we love. And like, I just feel like we have the ability to like really change people's lives and change them for the better and to have people see something in us or change them in some sort of way. And I really believe that we should all be doing whatever it is that we can to like make the world a better place in whatever way that is. Like, for some people that they're school teachers, for some people they, you know, volunteer and knock on doors to get people signed up to vote. Some people work in a hospital, like some people are athletes, and then we can use that sort of cachet that we have to do something good. But I think too, I'm just, there's a little bit of like, this world wasn't really designed for me anyways. So I'm certainly not going to try to fit in to some like crazy little box that's like very small. Yeah. So I'm just like, well, what's the worst that could happen? I don't know. I think I'm like, lack some analysis at times. I lack some deep analysis at times where I'm like, what's the worst that can happen?
You're literally skipping over the part of feeling like this world isn't for you, and that's no problem. That's not a big deal.
I
don't feel like you belong in this world, but that's great. I don't care.
Well, here I am, but this is crazy. I know. It is hard. I mean, at times it is hard, but I do feel like, especially coming out in college, I think something just clicked for me that was just like, okay, like, I get it. This is the game. Like, I'm not going to try to make you happy and, you know, whatever the thing is, the institution, whatever it is, happy, because it's like, you're never really going to be able to do that. You're not ever going to like be able to like get in unless you are, it was kind of like designed for you. So I was just like, eh, whatever, I'm just going to do something different.
So the dissociation theme is interesting because you are obviously famous and became famous maybe late. I don't know what the right age to become famous is, but you were probably mid-20s or late-20s when it, or maybe early, whenever it kind of became, when you woke up and were like, wow, I got a million followers or 2 million.
Yeah.
What do you, how do you live in that? How do you live in, and you said there's kind of two of you in a way. I almost think when people are that into social media, I'm not, and it's not mean that anything's bad. I just couldn't. I don't know how you function, not you personally, but one functions with feeling a little bit like everybody's got a little tiny bit of ownership in your life, a little speckle, and then to kind of realize, I can't take any of that in. I can't take the good, but then you probably have had so many people support you, and then 5% mean, and you go, well, how do I leave that, take this, that's a good comment, that's totally out of control, that person I respect, that person I don't. How do you, I couldn't do it. I think it's a great strength, but it's for famous people. I'm not, you're here, but I'm around famous people and I always ask them, how do you live in that? How do you properly like live your life in the healthiest way?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's like never a good age to be famous because famous is weird. But if you are going to, I think as late as possible in life is better. Let your brain develop as much as possible. And obviously that's such an issue with kids these days. They're getting social media so young and it's eating everybody alive. I think such a big part of how I deal with social media and how I do it well, I think, is like I didn't have it growing up. And I didn't really have it until, it wasn't really a thing until like 6, 7 maybe. And so it was just this like, this is weird. Like this really make any sense. And I think just, you know, especially after kneeling, it was like, okay, social media, you can get whatever you're looking for. If you want to be told you're amazing, go on after a game. I'm amazing. I'm the best player there's ever been. I'm the GOAT. I'm terrible. I hate America and I'm the worst player ever. And it's kind of like, it's fake. Like no one in real life is like that. I've had like one person since kneeling come up to me and be like, I think that that was really wrong what you did. He did it in a really respectful way. I was actually like getting an MRI in a hospital. And it was like in the elevator and he's like, I've just got to say, like, I don't think you're representing America really well. Yeah, I was like, okay, that's totally fine. But like one person in all this time. And I think you need to be really honest. And this is why I tell, you know, just teammates or whoever, like, you need to be really honest with yourself about what you can take on and what you can handle. And it's not like if you can handle more than you're better or if you can handle less than you're worse. That's not it. People have different personalities and they input information in a different way. And just like not to take it too seriously. I think there's good things about it. It's obviously business-wise, it's good. And, you know, exposure and, you know, we've seen it work amazing for Black Lives Matter movements and different social movements around. But it's like a fake world that can have real life consequences. I think we need to be really careful about how much stock you put in the fake world part, because it's just not really that real.
Yeah, it's interesting that you, I like what you said about, if you get that, whether it's fame or notoriety or publicity older, you kind of know where what it is and what it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're 15 or 12, or if the version of you now, when you were 12 and you're ranked number one in the country, and everybody knows who you are, and you're Instagramming your goals, your 3 goals.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how that doesn't. I don't know how you leave that. It's almost like embedded in your being. You talked about, you know, this idea of highlighting you, like yourself. I don't hear you talk much about you as much as you talk about your teams.
Okay.
And I think that gets lost a little bit too. Like even. Even when we were talking earlier, you were talking about our team, you know, you're like, even if I score, you know, it was never like, I did this. It was really interesting to hear you even talk about it. But I think that gets lost too when we're rewarded for like, what did you do? Like, I don't care what your team did. What did you do? And you fight that probably now at the international level or in your own team. You know, Rapinoe won the game, and you're like, well, I didn't really win the game. There's other players, you know, or you lost the game. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, I didn't know I was a tennis player or golfer. I thought I was in a team sport.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem you think that way.
No, I really don't. I think it goes back to the way that I grew up. I grew up as a twin, and I was never really, you know, even the best in my own house. And I think, you know, even just from a young age on the women's national team, playing like basically on an all-star team all the time, like everybody's the best. Everybody is amazing. And, you know, one of my, I think it was Christine Lilly. She was, you know, obviously like legend of the program, and her like kind of like very end of her career was right when I was just starting. And she kind of gave me this advice of just like, don't compare yourself to anyone else, because no one can be you. But in turn, like, you can't be anyone else either.
Yeah.
Well, you need to bring what you bring to the field, obviously. But everyone else has that thing, too, that is special about them, that's world-class about them. And I really, like, believe that. Like, I want my own space, and I want to, you know, have my own creativity and have freedom and independence. And I want that for everyone else. I know how that is important to me. And I feel like that's the special sauce when you everybody brings that and everybody understands how good the other players on their team are, like, now you can do something special. I mean, I think, you know, I am such a big fan of the Warriors. I just like have loved watching you guys play over all these years, and just all the different characters, and you have such interesting people, and you change the game and how everyone plays. Like, the whole NBA is different, you know. And if Steph wants to take every single shot, he could do that, and he could, you know, probably not have any championships. He doesn't want to do that. And if Draymond doesn't want to, not shoot and be the passer than he is, if he's the spoon puller, and if I mean, Clay's gonna shoot every shot, obviously.
Yeah, he doesn't care.
He's that's his special thing.
No, it's funny. Like, yeah, right. Like, he's elite.
This thing's going up.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But it's really cool to see in like, because it's not just like a blind selflessness. I don't believe in that either.
No,
yourself. You have nothing.
Yeah. No.
Well, it's like bringing your ultimate confidence with the understanding that like everybody else needs that space to do that as well. And then what can we put together that nobody can do on their own? I really think that that's the special thing about sports and championship teams.
More Lead by Example after this. And we're back. It's fascinating that you mentioned kind of your view of art, the Warriors, and there's a great Maya Angelou quote, they'll forget what you did, forget what you said, but she won't forget how you make people feel. And it's almost like, I hear about people talk about our team, and it's what we make people feel, but it's like a good movie where maybe it's how you feel about your experience on the women's international teams, where it's all of it, right? Like, and there's a lead actor. There's always a lead actor.
Sure.
But then you look back at a movie, one of our owners produced A Few Good Men, and Tom Cruise is the star. And he told me the story of how he had to convince Jack Nicholson to be in it. Jack Nicholson in the movie, I think he's in it for like 12 minutes.
Oh, that's so bad.
But you know what he does. Like, the movie doesn't, but it was 12 minutes of an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And so the point is, it's almost like, for me and what I do, I don't play. That's the fun part for me, is try to put it together. But you don't really ever know. But when you get it, you got to hang on to it. Like, you're international. You're going to tell the story of those teams, and they're going to remember you, and they're going to remember the elite players. But mostly they're going to remember watching that team play, right? And that's pretty amazing to kind of leave that mark, because you're going to remember where you were. I'm sure you get people tell you, I remember when you guys celebrated.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's pretty fun, right? That's pretty cool.
Like, I fell over in my Lazy Boy, or I was in a bar in Boston, or I was in New York City, and I was with my friend. Yeah, that's the thing. People are always like, remember who they were with and where or what they felt.
Yeah, that's cool. So last two questions. One, if you were your best friend, you're Megan's best friend, and you're living, this is the person you call, and I know you have your twin sister. But you know yourself probably better than anybody you're close to. What would you tell yourself now? Like, what would you be telling yourself now that you know, but maybe you're not doing, or you're like, I got to do more of this, or what would you encourage yourself or tell you not to do, or what?
I think I would tell myself to slow down. I think that I have that tendency. I'm, you know, energetic and like to, you know, be putting my hands in a lot of things. But I think I would, you know, especially as I get older and getting towards the later end of my career, I would say, like, slow down and not just, like, sit back and enjoy, but just kind of, like, slow down a little bit. It goes so quick. Like, I can't believe I'm, you know, 37 and, you know, going into, you know, hopefully it'll be my fourth World Cup. Like, that's crazy. That went so quick. So to just really, like, enjoy those moments when they come, I've always been big on that, is just celebrate the moments when they come, because you can't think them. You can't go back. You can't get that feeling back. Mm-hmm. Can't get the people back or the vibe. Mm-hmm. So, and it always changes in one way or another. So just to kind of slow down and enjoy it.
Good one. I had that as my New Year's resolution a few years ago, slow down. And I remember, like,
what happened?
Like, literally, I was tying my shoes and I was like, this, just slow down. You know, it wasn't even like, don't do that appearance. Don't go to that game. It was literally like when I moved to get in my car, like, just slow down. Like, don't get all your, but I would say that to me too. But it is important, right? And I'm older than you, but it actually probably gets more important. Well, not that it's not important now.
Yeah, something I'm sure you feel this as well. It's like it's what makes you great. It's what that energy and that engine that you have is what makes you great. But learning, I'm trying.
There's a cost, now. Right?
Yeah, there's a cost.
And it's your cost. So last one. When you're older, old, whatever you think it ends, 90, 100, 100 and over 100, and you're listening to somebody say something about you, or you get to look, you said you're not religious or whatever. If you get to see what they say about you when you're no longer here,
or that,
what do you hope it is?
Oh gosh. I hope that they say that I really genuinely cared and I like really enjoyed life at the same time. Yeah, like I cared about people. I cared about the things that that I did, and there was like a real energy for like making things better. But also, you only get one life, so you better enjoy it. You better do everything that you possibly can.
I think the reason people like you, or one of them, is feels like this is you. Like, you don't want to like it, don't like, but one of my favorite players, and since sounds like you watch a lot of sports, and not a perfect guy, but none of us are, was Allen Iverson. Was kind of like, this is me. And I think we like that as people. We're like, and I think you're like that. I think it's been really cool to talk to you. So I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.